something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.
This is Alice Wolfley with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Today we'll hear from Stuart Greenberg. His parents were communists who had been politically active in the 30s. They moved often during his childhood and passed on their values of gender equality and communal living. He participated in the birth of the organic farming movement in Illinois before moving to California as a single dad when his children were 2 and 4 years old. They settled in Laytonville, where he raised them off the grid.
Hello, my name is Stuart Greenberg. I was born in the Bronx, New York, September 1st, 1947. And I finished high school in Illinois. That would have been in 1964. Parents in the 30s were what we would have called hippies in the 60s and 70s. They were members of the Communist Party and the Socialist Party, and they lived on communes in New York State. My dad was a jazz musician. My mom loved the arts. She was kind of pigeonholed by the times. Be a mom, mm-hmm. stay at home. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until they were divorced that she found her strength. She had to raise, I have two younger, much younger brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. So I moved here in the late summer of 1976. I arrived here with 48 cents in my pocket. And one of the first things I did when I was here was come to a fair in Albion. And it just kind of blew my mind, seeing everything that you didn't see back in the Midwest, accepted. Here it was all acceptable, whether it was tie-dye or people smoking pot or doing peyote and dancing naked. And these are things we did in secret in the Midwest. It was happening in the streets here. Mm-hmm. California is where you can make your dream a reality.
And what was that dream?
That dream was to see more and more communes, more people living peaceably, gender equality, diversity, back to the land, of course. We were even at that time concerned with, from the Midwest, farming practices. We had the first organic farm in Illinois, and nobody cared. We'd go to market with our produce, and it's organic. We'd like a higher price, and they'd go, $3 a bushel, take it or leave it. What's organic? I wanted to buy land. Mm-hmm. So I came up to Willits. And I went to a realtor. The second day I was looking, being shown property in Laytonville area, and I found this amazing 40-acre piece that had everything, flatlands, a year-round creek, a mountain, all of the resources you could want. It was $28,000 for 40 acres. My intention was to buy my own land and probably allow other people to live on it with me. And I did that at first, and most of them took advantage of the situation. They liked the benefits, but they didn't want to contribute monetarily, and sometimes people wanted to ohm instead of plant food, and that would annoy me. Not that I'm against ohming, but you can ohm when I'm eating in the fall, and you're not. Well, at that time, I also hunted, so I would hunt deer and quail, and we had rabbits rather than chickens, and raised about, maybe 30% of our food. And I had two children when I came here. I was a single dad. I came here with two children. That was really hard and difficult. I'd got very little help from other people. Other men weren't interested in sharing child care, and neither were the women. I hired people to watch my kids while I worked, and I built a house by hand without electricity with help of some new friends. Part of my concept of back to the land was not using modern energy sources or technology. So it nearly killed me, sawing wood by hand all day long, but I did it. And I wanted to prove to myself and to the world that you didn't have to use a tremendous amount of energy in order to get by. But I was 28. If you asked me to do that now, I'd say, what, are you crazy? And that's where I raised those children until 1990. I got a job teaching at the high school and the junior college, teaching agriculture. And the community, even though I had really long hair and a big beard, and I didn't own a briefcase, I didn't own a raincoat, the first day that it rained, I actually came to school with a big black plastic garbage bag with a head and armholes cut out for a raincoat. Nobody seemed to mind. They said, as long as you do your job, that's all we care about. Yes, there were downsides. I was a single dad. I wasn't getting help raising the kids. There were very few people in terms of dating. At that point in my life, I think the big downside was not having female companionship. The people were a little hesitant to take on a single dad with two young kids. But other than that, no, I was in heaven. I just thought, this is what I wanted, and here it is.
He eventually did end up meeting someone, and they got married and had a child, who was born in their remote cabin with the help of a midwife.
And my wife, a very strong woman, walked up, straight up the mountain, Black Rock, behind our property, the day before she delivered, came back to the house, the midwife was there, and went into labor, had the baby squatting on the floor, my wonderful daughter, Jacole, who's now 36 years old, and Meg, the midwife, and I, and Janice delivered that baby right in the cabin. Mostly, I worked hard on the land. Unless you've tried to build a house with all the electricity, you wouldn't know. It's constant work. And having two children, there really isn't a lot of time for socializing. Although I did do things to get the kids to school that I never would have done for myself. I took that responsibility that they needed to have the social life. And that was another downside. Once school was out, there were no other kids to play with at home. It was Papa and two kids. And I knew they needed more socialization. So eventually we spent more time in town and social activities, and I became more involved in the community.
With drugs, and what was the experience in the community with drugs? Did that play a big part of your life at that time?
Yes. I'm a child of the 60s, and the biggest change in my life, intellectually, spiritually, took place after taking psychedelics. Completely opened my mind and my heart to greater and wider perceptions, changed my view of reality in a very positive way. My first psychedelic experience was in 1966 in Chicago, Illinois. I took some LSD, and I was with a woman who had taken LSD and told me all about it. And I took some and nothing happened. So I took some more and still nothing happened. And then an hour or two later, I took some more. And still nothing happened, so I took some more. And about 4 hours later, I thought I was hit by lightning. It could have been God. Something knocked me to my knees and completely opened my mind and my heart to a perceived reality that I had no inkling of prior to that. I could have read about it, but I hadn't experienced it. And I actually experienced the things you read about, and it was life-changing. I saw at a subatomic level that everything was connected, that everything was energy. And behind that energy, I felt there was a love that connected everything, that the wholeness understood that it was whole, and the parts understood they were part of the whole. When you were experienced experiencing the psychedelic chemicals. And often after that, it might fade away and you would lose that reality. Then you would disconnect and you would be you and I would be me instead of we're us. And I mean, you knew not to pick somebody else's nose, but you also knew that really it's just about energy.
Did you continue to use psychedelics for recreation or for, you know, experiences on into your life?
Yes, I used them throughout the 60s and the 70s, and I was arrested for possession of LSD in Illinois in 1966, actually, when I was 19 years old. But I continued after probation ended, just not as much as I did when I was 19, 20, 21, 22. At 24, I had children, and I rarely did psychedelics after that.
You're listening to Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. I'm Alice Wolfley. We're hearing from Stuart Greenberg, who came to California from Southern Illinois in 1976. He settled near Laytonville and supplemented his income growing marijuana. In 1984, he had a harrowing brush with the law.
Here's the story about when I got busted. I was growing some marijuana on my property, so you need to know that. I lived in Laytonville a number of years, and one of the well-respected women in town had taken a correspondence with a convict in a California prison. And when he was released, he moved to Laytonville and got a job at one of the local businesses. And everybody in town treated him kindly and thought, if he's with so-and-so, then he must be okay. Unbeknownst to the town, he had been committing armed robberies throughout California. And I don't remember why I didn't want to drive to San Francisco, but I was going to the airport, and he offered to take me to the airport from Laytonville. And on the way to the airport, he showed me that he had a pistol with him. And I said, whoa, you are an ex-felon. What are you doing with a pistol? And he said, I'm going to Sacramento to rob a coke dealer. And I thought, well, let me out of the car. I really don't want to be with you. And you shouldn't be doing this. And he said, well, don't worry about it. Let me just take you to the airport. And he did. He dropped me off at the airport. I was gone a week. When I came back, I took a bus from San Francisco to Laytonville. I got off the bus and people said, did you hear what happened to so-and-so? I won't mention his name. No, what happened? Oh, they're looking for him. The police are looking for him. He murdered a cocaine dealer in Sacramento. And I thought, oh my God, he must have gone there after he dropped me off. I don't know what I should do with this information. And I didn't do anything with it. I kept it to myself. And he had two accomplices. And they actually, that's right now, I had gone to dinner with them and he and my wife. They treated us to dinner north of Laytonville. So they knew who I was. They knew where I lived. And when they got arrested, they told the police, well, why don't you go out to Stewart's property? Maybe he's hiding there. And I was surprised shortly after my return. They still hadn't found him. All of these DEA, SWAT, Sheriff's Department, there must have been 20 armed law enforcement people landed on the property, helicopters, squad cars, trucks, looking for this killer.
And your children and family were there at the time?
One of the children. The other child was in school, and the third child was living with her mother. But the baby was there. And they came and surrounded the place and were looking for this person. I said, well, he's not here. Well, do you mind if we look in your house? And I said, do I have a choice? I wasn't going to say, show me your warrant. an army was out there with ballistics I had never even seen. I thought, whoa, what's going on? Well, the first thing they did was look under my bed, and I thought, really? I'm in the middle of the woods. You think somebody is hiding under the bed? But I kept quiet, and they searched the property. They discovered marijuana on the property, and they said, well, we would have to arrest you if we saw anything illegal here. But since you've been so cooperative, I don't think we saw anything illegal here. By the grace of God, they left 2 days later, and they caught him, arrested him. He died in San Quentin. And that was quite a frightening experience. Okay. Our current sheriff, Tom Allman, was a deputy at that time in Laytonville. You could ask him. He'd remember that one. I was very much in favor of legalization, or at least not getting busted. I don't know if I was in favor of legalization as much as lay off the busting of everybody. And so this county represented where most people who dropped out from everywhere else came to, because they like to get high and they like to be naked and they like to have sex and they like to sing and dance. And so did I. And you can't do that in Southern Illinois.
This is Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. I'm Alice Wolfley. We're hearing from Stuart Greenberg. Women's empowerment was important to Stuart. When he ran for student government in college, his platform centered around access to birth control. And when he came to California, he hoped to find more gender equality than he had experienced in the Midwest.
Were you able to experience gender equality when you were in Mendocino County?
No. Women were still treated differently then. The idea was there, but the relationships, for whatever reason, testosterone or whatever, men seemed to be bullying. Men were the primary landowners. A lot of the women came to the land to clip pot, and they were treated kind of more as sexual objects, employees, but there was always hit on the women kind of vibe. The women hadn't really risen up completely yet. More so over here, Albion, you know. Inland, it was very different than here on the coast. Mm. You worked your butt off because you lived way in the woods and you just worked. There wasn't as much intellectual and cultural pursuit inland as I found later when I moved to the coast.
Why do you think that was?
I think the energy, if you had the ability to see the patterns of energy on the planet, that the coastal energy might be more conducive to the right hemisphere of the brain, to aesthetics, and it influences the environment and those who live in that kind of energy. Inland was more Wild West. It was, guys could see how strong they really were, and women often were stuck having the children and not getting equal child care, you know, because the men were doing the hard work and saying, oh, no, I can do it better than you. You don't know how to build. You don't know how to plumb. Take care of the kids. Cook the food. Have sex with me. And that's kind of how it was. Whether that's, you know, cool or right, that's how it was. The coast seemed to have a much stronger women's power.
Were there any gay people that you knew of?
Yes. Woodman Canyon, where I live, north of Laytonville, had more than a third of the Back to the Landers were gay men from San Francisco. They were, I guess, what you would call butch, because they were doing all of the same rugged kind of work. But they would have their little holidays and dress and drag and stuff like that occasionally. But this was right before the AIDS happened. And most of those men were dead within 4 years out in Woodman Canyon. I worked and one of the founding members of Laytonville, we used to have a hospice called Redwood Project, which eventually came under the umbrella of the Willits Hospice. And unfortunately, we dealt with an awful lot of dying gay men. AIDS was just rampaging through California at that time. And so it hit hard in that particular canyon. There just seemed to be, one man bought property and then would tell friends, there's more property, come on out here. Nobody seems to care that we're gay, and which was true. They were well accepted by the community. By most of the community, by the liberal-minded community. I don't know how nobody got beat up for being gay, but most of them died.
What do you think were the benefits and what do you think were the challenges for your children of growing up the way that they did?
I think the benefits that my children enjoyed and from living back off the land was the experience of living in nature, unplugged from the grid. We did not have electricity. I wanted them to know what it was like to live in nature, to experience the quiet. Although there were times when I thought, if the tree frogs and crickets get any louder, I'm just going to freak out. Fresh air, good food. The benefits, looking back on it, were more for me. My children told me when they grew up, we really wished you had more money so we could have nicer clothes and television and new cars. And the first thing they both did when they moved out was to buy televisions. We never had television. At a certain point, I broke down and hooked up 12-volt things to my truck battery. And then we got a VCR and a player so they could watch movies occasionally. They're very much of, I call them countrypolitan people, because they're comfortable now in both the country and metropolitan areas. If you ask them, they would probably say, I loved being in the country, but I also missed having friends sleep over, come out to play with, television, new clothes, $150 Nike gym shoes. I'd say, they were only $3.98 when I was a kid. PF Flyers are good enough for you, and we can go to the thrift store and free box and... That was what I thought was for their best interest. It was really for my best interest. Although, when you're a parent, if you're a first-time parent, what you think is right for the kids. Two of my three kids grew up. They own their own properties. They live rurally. One lives in Seattle. And her daughter, my granddaughter, I asked her, wouldn't you like to come live here, Indra? And she said, oh, Booba, they call me Booba. I can only handle so much nature. Now she's 15. She was 13 when she said that. Okay, well, I can only handle so much city, so I guess I have to honor and respect your wishes. For me, coming of age in the 60s, being affected politically, spiritually, psychedelically. To me, that was these are the highlights of my life that changed from who I was to who I became to who I am. I call it the opus of my life. It was, and still is. Amazingly, I'm so grateful and thankful that I've had the opportunity to live here and live the life I have lived. I'd wish it on anybody, except I also know everybody has different opinion as to what they would like to do with their life. So for me, this was it. This was the answer to the prayers, and I can't imagine leaving here. Even I said I lived in Hawaii and came back to Mendocino. Most people go, why would you want to build without electricity? Why wouldn't you want electricity? Why don't you want television? I think I'm kind of an anachronism. I don't know that anybody will 100 years from now say, wow, that was an amazing person. They'll probably say, what a fool. Why didn't they take advantage of the technology? I didn't want to. It was available. I chose not to. And I'm glad that I chose not to take advantage of the technology. And I'm very happy I moved back to the land and stayed there.
You've been listening to Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. We just heard from Stuart Greenberg, who now lives in Elk. Archives of the program, along with photos, are available at kzyx.org and the Promise of Paradise Facebook page. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, the Mendocino Institute, Story Center, and Grace Hudson Museum.